in this area.
Okay, take your seats. Welcome. Nice to see you all. A lot of new faces here. Some old faces. Well, not that you're old, just like face I haven't seen for a while. Okay, so. My name is Rabbi Lawrence, and the topic for discussion this evening is Holy Moses, what's up with the Ten Commandments? Does anyone know why I chose that topic now? Why did I choose that topic of the Ten Commandments right now, this week, right now in the Jewish calendar? Leah? Yeah, we did receive it. No doubt about that. Received it, we did. What's in them, we're going to find out. By whom, we're going to find out. But why now is the question. Rebecca Dengro, any idea?
Isn't there a holiday that celebrates this?
Is there a holiday that celebrates this whole Ten Commandments thing? That's the question. I know the answer to that question. Yes, sir.
There's a holiday of Shavuot.
There is a holiday called Shavuot. And that's coming up when?
What's the 6th of Hebrew month?
So, there is no date given for this holiday. We know the date. But the date isn't given. How you find out the time for this holiday called Shavuot? What does the word Shavuot mean? Anybody know?
Weeks.
Means weeks. So you count 7 weeks from Passover, from Pesach. So that's 7 weeks, which is 7 days per 7 weeks. That's 49 days. On the 50th day, i.e. the night after that, we have this holiday called Shavuot. And this follows the same pattern as the Jewish people who left Egypt in the year 2448 on the 15th of Nisan, which is Pesach time. That was the first of a Passover. And 49 days later, they received the Torah on Mount Sinai. So that means, coming up, in a few weeks, we have the Torah holiday called Shavuot that commemorates the giving of the Torah to the Jewish people. And if you remember, if you've been with me before, that is considered to be the biggest moment of Jewish history. The receiving of the Torah by the Jewish people from God at Mount Sinai. Without that, we've got no Jews. That is what makes the Jews the Jews. Are we clear on that? Any questions so far? Okay. So it's pretty apropos that we have this holiday called Shavuot coming up, and we're discussing Ten Commandments. So tonight's class, we're going to go a little bit deeper, but I'm not going to do too much teaching. I'm going to ask questions, describe a little bit, and then I'm going to throw it out to you to give me the answers. But before I do that, you're going to have a little bit of background. And it goes like this. We know that we have 613 commandments in the Torah, in the Bible. Of those 613, we've got 10 that stand out, and they're called the Ten Commandments. You may have seen the movie with Charlton Heston being Moses, going up a mountain, God speaking to him in an American accent, which we know is false, because if God has an accent, it's English. That's like 101 in Judaism. Right? No. God does not sound like he's from New York. I'm not buying it. If God sounds like anything, he's got the Queen's English. So that's first mistake of that movie. No. No New York accent. I don't want to hear Californian accent. No. Mistake number two. Moses went up the mountain in that movie. In this case, Charlton Heston. Didn't have a rifle on him at the time. But he went up, and God spoke to him by himself. Now, that's also not accurate, because if you look in the Torah, we know that the entire Jewish people collectively had that revelation, which, as we mentioned before, is the only time in any religion that anyone even makes that claim, that the entire Jewish people heard God speaking at Mount Sinai. So from this 613, we take out these 10, and they were put onto, anyone know? Onto tablets. I love the word tablets. Like, yeah, take these two, call them in the morning. Oh, that right? They were put onto tablets. So what were these tablets exactly? Like large Advil? I was like, whoa, you Jews, you talk a lot. You got a bad headache. Take these two, you'll be fine. Like, I'm going to need a big glass of water to get these two down. Okay, so we call them tablets, but what were they actually made of? Anyone know? They were made of stone. They were made of stone. How many stones were there? How many stones were there? You watched the movie for that part. There were two stones. There were two tablets. How big were they? So the Talmud, the oral Torah tells us, they were one ammah by one ammah by one ammah. How big is an ammah? So the English word arm, A-R-M, comes from the Hebrew word ammah. Okay, an arm's length. So how big is an arm's length? So anywhere between a foot and a half and 2 feet. Let's go with 2 feet. So we have blocks of stone that are 2 by 2 by 2. And there's two of them. You get me so far? And how are they divided? How are they divided? Anyone know? There were... Thank you so much. Tough crowd. Suddenly Jews don't want to talk. Right? I'm on the phone with people, yap, 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 yap. Suddenly come to my classes, Jews aren't talking anymore. Right! There were five on each. There were five on one, and there were five on the other. Now, forget what these commandments actually say. We'll leave them aside for the moment. We're going to see what's in them. Here's a question. Imagine for a moment that you are God. Which, for some of you, may not be such a big stretch of the imagination. You may have the illusion of omnipotence, that you are God. So play the role. And you have this Torah, right, these laws, to give the Jewish peeps. Right? And you're like, now these 10, I'm going to put on stone. Were the other commandments put on stone? What does that imply? I'm putting it on stone, as opposed to a piece of parchment or paper. What am I saying? What? These are important. Right? These are important. I'm drilling these on stone. So we have these 10 commandments, which I'm going to drill into stone. And according to the Jewish commentators, it wasn't written on the stone, right? It could have been emblazoned, but no. It was cut into the stone, right through. Actually, one of the miracles they say was you could actually revolve the stones and see the exact same thing written out the same way, right to left. Some miraculous thing. Whatever that means, it means. That was one of the miracles of these 10 commandments. Some very special stones. So you have five on one side, five on the other. Now, you're God, right, in this scenario? And you want to give 10 commandments. Okay, put it on stone. It's like, you know what I'm saying? These things, they're heavy. Right? Heavy, important. Yeah? Good. Why don't we have just one big mega stone? And make a list of 1 through 10. Hear the question? I mean, it's a childish question, but I think it's an important one. I'm God. Right? I'm like, you know, one big stone, list of 1 through 10.
5 you're supposed to do and 5 you're not supposed to do.
5 you're not supposed to do. That's not true, as I'll show you in a second. But even if it were true, take one stone, top 5 the do nots, the bottom 5 the do do's. Excuse the expression. Are you with me? So you're going to see in a second there are some things, there's more than 5 do nots, there's more than that. So. Yes, Jeannie, hi. Let's go.
The first 5 are related to God, and the other are related to other people.
Says Jeannie Rivkin. Rabbi, look at the piece of paper. The first 5 are between us and God. The second 5 are between us and each other. So, that's a great answer. Anyone, look at your list in front of you. Anyone have a question on Jeannie's answer? We like questions, remember that we're Jews. Does anyone have a question on Jeannie's answer? Michael, yeah. Number 5 says you have to honor your mother and your father. Would you say that is a mitzvah between us and God, or us and each other? Us and each other. Will someone like to answer that answer on Jeannie's question? Answer that answer on Jeannie's question. That's how you do in Judaism, right? You have question, you have answer, you have answer, you have question, you keep... How would you answer that? Bessie, you've got to answer that question.
I don't have an answer.
Yes, you do. You've just got to get it out of you. It's in there. When I tell it to you, you'll be like, ah, I got it. That means had you dug a little bit deeper, you would have got it.
Okay.
Let's dig. Says Bessie, Rabbi, is obviously, that's the right answer. It was just there. You could have dig a little bit deeper. There must be some kind of relationship between you and your parents and you and God. Now we're going to have to get there. We're going to get there, and it's a tough one. It's a tough one. Relationship with Jewish parents, not easy. Relationship with God, not easy. Fine. So there is going to be some connection. So we have a question. The answer is going to be, you know what? This whole Jewish parents and Jewish kids, or any parents, any kids really, there's some kind of divine, godly connection we're tapping into with that very, very difficult mitzvah. By the way, according to the head of my yeshiva, that is the hardest mitzvah out of all 613. All the rest of them, walk in the park. Shabbos, easy. Fasting Yom Kippur, easy. Honoring your parents, if you know what the mitzvah involves, if you know the details in that mitzvah, you'll be like, whoa. I'm moving out. That's just too much. It's worth getting married just for that. Okay, so that's a question. So, Jeannie, we're going to go back to your answer and say you're absolutely correct. The first five are between us and God, which in Hebrew is Bein Adam L'Makom. Makom is one of the names of God. It literally means place. A Makom in modern Hebrew means a place. As a Makom, which place? Why is one of the names of God Makom? Because God is every place and fills all space, yet He's no space either. But that's the idea of Makom. And the other five are Bein Adam L'Chaver, between us and each other. Okay, I'm down with that. But let's go back to the first question we had over here, which was, fine, then list them 1 through 10 and say top 5 between us and God, bottom 5 between us and each other. Why two blocks? Why two blocks? God couldn't find a rock big enough? No, it can't be. Just say top five, bottom five. Becca Boswell, you got an answer for us? You do. You just don't know you know the answer. You got to think about it. That's what it was with Torah. When you learn Torah, you hear the answer, you're like, oh, I hear that. That means it was there. You got to dig a little bit deeper. Anyone want to venture a guess?
Equals to each other.
So when you put things next to each other, what are you saying? You're saying that they are to some degree equal. And that is correct. Because not only is there a vertical connection between 1 and 5 and 6 through 10, there is, say the commentators, a horizontal connection as well. 1 and 6, 2 and 7, 3 and 8, 4 and 9, 5 and 10. Most Jews do not know what I just told you. You've now been elevated to the top 1% of the Jewish people and their knowledge with that information alone. You could walk out right now and know it all. But you're not going to. Except Sarah's got someone to go in a few minutes. Okay, so what is the connection? So what I'm going to do is the following. We're going to play a little game tonight. A little game! Like the dating game. Ever see the dating game? Remember that? Still have it on TV? I don't know. When I was a kid, we used to watch it all the time. I'm going to bring you two partners, and I'm going to roll out to you, and you peeps are going to tell me the connection. Has everyone got the rules of the game? The rules are, there are no rules. I'm going to give you the two commandments, and you're going to be like, the connection is wham bam. Clear? Let's play. Commandment number one. What does it say, Lena? What does it read?
I am the Lord your God.
Who, you are?
Yes.
All right. So, bit of an ego problem over there, I think. Take it easy. I am the Lord your God. How do you say I in Hebrew? Anybody know? Ani is how you say I. What is the first word over here in Hebrew? Anybody know? You gotta kind of know this one. Either you do or you don't. Anochi. Now the word Anochi means I. The word Ani also means I, but you never use the word Anochi. In modern Hebrew, we don't say Anochi Olech Lecha. Right? You don't say I Anochi. You say Ani. Ani Olech, Ani Olechet, whatever. So the word Anochi means I, but it only used when God's talking. And not always, by the way. But sometimes. What does it mean? What's the difference between Ani and Anochi? So the word Anochi means me and only me. Ani means me, but it could be you. In other words, I'm going shopping, but you could do it as well. Right? Whenever you see the word Ani, it could be, I'm going somewhere. You can come as well. Or, I'm going to buy something. You could buy it if you want to. Anochi is me and only me. It is exclusive ownership of what's about to follow. So what are the words that follow? I am the Lord your God. So when it says Anochi, it means me and only me. I'll tell you a very interesting Kabbalistic secret, which I like to throw in once in a while. I am not a Kabbalist. If I was, I'll be charging a lot more money than I do to Birthright. Only kidding. The word Anochi is made up of four letters. Aleph, Nun, Chaf, Yud. Those four letters are actually Rosh Tov Tevo, which means the beginning letters of four words. Ana, Nafsha, Ketavit, Yahavit, which is Aramaic and means I, myself, have been written and given. Let me plug that into our equation. When God says Anochi, He's saying, if you want to get to know who I am, my essence, now that's big words, God has an essence. Whatever that really means, it means. But He's saying, if you want to get to know me, I have written it down and given it to you in these words. I'll say that again. Anochi means I. But He's saying I, Ana Nafsha, my soul. God's saying my soul. Like, knowing what a soul is anyway. Never mind God's soul. It's just, you could turn your brain to guacamole, have it ooze out of your ear. But that's what He says. The Kabbalists say, God is saying my essence, who I am. If you want to know God, you read the Torah, it's right there for you. You will understand the nature of what God is. That may take you a lifetime, or according to some opinions, a few lifetimes to forget. That's another discussion for another time. But that is what we're going to get to. So I'm the Lord your God. What does it say after those words? Anybody know? You saw the movie? I'm the Lord your God who took you out of the land of Egypt. Remember that? That was the whole Pesach thing that came up a couple of weeks back. We're all still recovering from that experience. I at this moment have matzah around here. Still working its way through. It's still working its way through. It takes time to get through the system. After Shavuot, I'm clear, thank God. Right? It takes time to digest cardboard. I understand. It's slave food. It doesn't go straight through. So God says, I'm the Lord your God who took you out of Egypt. Now, let's say that the Ten Commandments are God's business card. You have a business card? Like, hi, do you have your card? Yeah, here it is. So this is God's. God walks in for the interview. He's like, me? I'm God. 2 week blocks, smash! Right, the pens go flying, there's like smoke and like steam goes off and dust flies everywhere. A table breaks. This is God's business card. Now, how's it work with a business card? You've got to get it right the first time. But the first few words, I am Melissa, I am Rebecca, and I am a teacher, I'm a dancer, whatever it is. The first words are, that's where it's at, yeah? Okay. So God says, I'm the Lord your God, who, drum roll please, took you out of the land of Egypt. You're like, hold on one second. Bit of an anticlimax, isn't it? I mean, oh, it's pretty good. It's like, I want to get the job of designing the Twin Towers. So I'm like, here's my resume. And I am Rabbi Lawrence, who wallpapered my aunt's bathroom. Beautiful paisley, in orange. And can I get the job, please? Like, now that's impressive. You know what I'm saying? You got bigger things than that on your resume, don't you? I personally don't. But, I mean, God probably does. So of all the things God, I mean, what's God's, you're God. What's your opening line? I am God who? That's not so impressive. I am God who? Who? created the world. That's pretty big. It's like world, universe, and everything in it. I mean, that's a big opener, isn't it? Isn't it? Tough crowd. Mental note, never give a class on a Monday night ever again. I am the Lord of God who?
Creator.
Stop repeating what I say. I am the Lord your God who? What else? Who? God? Hello, I've thought about God before, sorry. Rabbi here, trying to get a little bit of God discussion going. Who created people? Who keeps your heart beating right now? Who helps you with your relationships? You know, God, person we pray to, please help me with ABC. You know what I'm saying? I'm the Lord. The stars, the universe, impressive. No? How many stars are there in the universe? Anyone know? A what? A lot. Good answer. Oh. A very academic answer there. I like that. Bye-bye. There's a heck of a lot. Next. So, funnily enough, in Australia, they have a university over there where they counted the stars. Obviously, in Australia, they have no social life and way too much beer and free time on their hands. But Australian astronomers actually wanted to count the amount of stars in the sky. And I have this study on my computer. I collect this stuff. I have no social life. No problem. What they did was they actually mapped out a piece of sky. Counted how many stars, then multiplied that space by how many such spaces there were in the entire universe. You get it? They ended up with a number which was 76 billion, which is the number 7, with I think 36 zeros straight afterwards. Does that mean anything to you? Let me make it very clear. If you count every grain of sand in the entire universe, every beach, every desert, every footpath, multiply that number by 10, that's how many stars there are in the known universe. You hear it? And there's you lying down saying, 1, 2, 3. You'll be there a long time. Now that's impressive. God made all that. And it all works perfectly in great symmetry. Like, no. Not Ten Commandments. Ten Commandments, we took you out of Egypt. Somebody please. Why is that the big opener? Answer somebody? Yes, Bessie. You're on a roll now. Bessie's on a roll. Yeah.
It's the most recent event that they could actually
work. Okay, yeah.
It's the one God and people have been coming.
Good, yeah.
I think it's symbolic of the creation of the Jewish people.
Also good. And what are we saying? When the world was created, which is described at the beginning of the Torah, we know God is great and makes the whole universe and everything in it. Good. I'm down with that. But what the whole I took you out of Egypt thing does is makes it personal. It's not like some religions believe that God is just some far off being out there somewhere who doesn't get involved in worldly matters. No. The creation of the Jewish people started with an event that says God is not only great, can do whatever he wants, but is actively involved in your personal life. That's how we view God. God is involved on a personal level with my problems, with my struggles, with my slavery, whether in Egypt or elsewhere. That's how we view God. Not, well, God doesn't hear me, I'm a mere mortal. No. God hears and gets involved. You've got problems, you speak to the boss. Let's jump to commandment number 6, which is do not kill. Let's talk about that. What's all that about? Killing. I have a question, and I'd like an answer. What's wrong with killing? I'm going to ask that again. Okay, put your hands up. Is killing a bad thing? Is it always a bad thing? No. Well, either it is or it isn't. Which one is it? And the answer is? It depends. Exactly. Depending what you're killing, why you're killing, how you're killing, and when you're killing. So really, killing isn't the right word. We're going to use the word do not murder. That's probably kind of close to the truth. Anyone know elsewhere in the Torah where actually killing is a good thing, is actually a mitzvah? Anyone know? Yes?
Does it have to do with like the slaughtering of animals?
No. I'm talking about humans. In self-defense. In self-defense. It says in the Torah, Babmachter, a person tunnels into your house to steal something, and your nerves, this person could be lethal. Kill him. Kill him. That's called self-defense. But you're taking a life, I hear. But you know what? It's either them or me. Hayecha kaidem. Your life comes first. You can kill him. Should you be upset? Yeah. But you've done a mitzvah. You've done a mitzvah. There are times when it's a mitzvah, meaning it's a spiritual obligation to do that. Your life comes first. Okay? Let me add a little twist before we look for the connection. You may remember, we discussed, those who've been here before on the Bar Mitzvah course, and those who haven't, before the Torah was given, were there any laws that existed elsewhere? I don't know. There were seven laws, the Sheva Mitzvah Bnei Noach, seven laws that applied then and still apply now to all non-Jewish peeps. If you are non-Jewish, there's seven laws. Anyone know what those seven laws are? They are, in no specific order, Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Dalet. Ava, Eva, Minachai. You cannot take either limb of a live animal or torture animals. Beis, you cannot, Birchas Hashem, curse God. Gimel, Gezela, no stealing. Dalet, Dinim, you must set up fair and just law courts. And the big three, no idol worship, boop. No murder, boop. And no forbidden sexual relationships, boop. That's our big seven. Applies to all nations of the entire world, according to Judaism, starting at the time of Noah. Now, within that seven I just told you, it said, do not kill. 1 second. So that means for a long time before, this idea of not killing already was known. Why do I have to repeat it in the Ten Commandments? It's like, oh, I forgot. Oh, there I was, about to butcher a whole town, and I completely forgot. Oh, it's in the seven laws of Noah. It's old news. Why do they have to repeat, do not kill again? I like to tap dance once in a while. Unfortunately, I can't tap dance, it's a bit of a problem. It's very important. I'm going to say they're all important. They're all important. Yeah.
Because now 3 million were listening.
Because
3 million were listening.
Yeah, so.
So 4 people.
The entire world knew not to kill. It was like a known thing at that time, do not kill. And there were more than 3 million people in the world. But you're both kinda getting there. Kind of dancing around. Yeah, anybody else? Okay, I'll give you this answer is an incredible answer. If you understand this answer, it was worth my mother having me. That's what the commentators say. Up to that point, you knew not to kill. Why was it repeated in the Ten Commandments for the Jewish people? Because do not kill for Jewish people doesn't just mean do not kill a person. It also means if you take a person's wife or husband, you're killing that person. The person left behind. Now, it's not a capital crime, but you're killing them. If you take a person's income from them, according to Judaism, you've killed them. Now, they're still alive, but to some degree, they're dead. If you embarrass a person in public, according to Judaism, you've killed them. Now, again, it's not a capital crime, right? You don't get put to death for it, but spiritually, to some degree, they're dead. So that means, when it says in the Ten Commandments, do not kill, it not only means do not kill, which it does mean, but it also means there is a higher spiritual standing that you are going to have to hold by if you're Jewish. the way you treat other people's relationships, with their spouses, with their money, with their personalities. Much, much harder. Okay, there are two commandments. Number one, I'm the Lord your God. Number six, do not kill. The connection, please. Over to you. Anybody peeps? Yes.
When you kill, you're taking on God's role.
When you kill, you're taking on God's role. Anybody else? Yes.
When you kill, you're also killing a piece of God, because each person has their soul is made up of a piece of...
When you kill a person, you're killing God, because we all come from God. Our souls do anyway. Very nice. Anybody else? Yes, Jeannie? You're on form tonight. Right, you ate your Wheaties this morning. Yeah.
You're undoing God's work.
Okay. Wow, a lot of depth there. Wow. I'm feeling it. Becca, you hear those answers? Beep. Beep. Let me ask you a quick question. What is wrong with killing? I mean, when it comes down to it. What's wrong with going up to a woman and saying, hi, that's a nice pocketbook. Any money in there? She's like, yes, honey. A couple hundred bucks. Take a brick, knock her on the head, he takes a pocketbook, and he goes home. Anything wrong with that? I'm not being facetious, maybe a little. I'll take an answer, nonetheless. Leah, is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Bad.
Bad thing. You sure?
Yeah.
100%?
Yeah.
Good. Just checking. Because I don't want you knocking old ladies on the street, you know what I'm saying? Keep an eye on her, watch her. Yeah, Leah, why is that a bad thing? We don't really think about this, do we? Why is it a bad thing?
Morals.
What morals? I have no morals. I kill a woman for money. Morals of other people. I'm into cash.
It's not yours.
It is now. It didn't start as being mine, but I acquired it with a brick on the head.
Yeah.
Rabbi, what's going on over here? I mean, what's really wrong with killing? Yes.
You kill God inside of you. You kill yourself.
Nope, I'm killing an old lady.
Well,
I mean, what's wrong with taking another person's life? I mean, it comes down to it. Isn't that strange you have no answers? This is like pretty big. You're in the newspapers. Oh, 5 people were killed in Rabbi. Great. No problem with that. We're repulsed by it. Why? What's wrong with killing another person? 1 second. Let me ask you a question. You go on safari, right? You pay your $20,000, whatever it is. You fly off to Kenya, and you're watching the safari scene in the safety of your Jeep. And there is that deer fleeting across. And behind it is coming the lion. And he's passing out. You're watching like, go, 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 go. And then you see the lion goes, whoosh, knocks him out. He's on the floor. There's a tussle. Like, oh, I can't watch. I've got to watch. I can't watch. Oh, look at that. Oh, I can't watch. Tell me, does the park ranger arrive? Okay, put the animal down. Mr. A. Lion, is that you? Blood coming off him. Where were you on the afternoon of the 14th? He's like, you're here right now. So tell me, were you acquainted with said deer? He's like, it was my dinner. He's like, come with me, please. And off goes the lion. Or maybe four legs, I don't know. No, he had no problems with animals taking bites out of other animals. So what's the problem with me seeing another person? I'm hungry as a lion. I approach her, take a bite out of her neck, chunk out, and take the money and go. How come that's a problem? I mean, if according to evolution, we're just advanced monkeys, that's the big deal. They kill for a living, and I'm going to kill for a living. They kill the deer, I take the cash. What's up with that? So it goes like this. You're going to have to say, at some point, that there is a difference. You've got to say there is a difference. When it comes to killing an animal, if done the right way, obviously, You have to say that that's okay because we are not animals. We hold ourselves to a higher standard. Because philosophically speaking, there should be no problem. Or killing an animal is murder. And animals killing animals, that's the rest of them all. Meaning the only reason I can't kill another person is because there has to be a spiritual element in that person that doesn't exist in that animal. There's more in a human, and we just know it innately. And you can argue it again and again, but it's just got to be that way. So what's the connection? How are we going to tie these two points together? Let me ask like this. Can you kill God? Is that possible to kill God? It's like, come here. Where do you go? Can you kill God? No. What have we got of God in this world? Can you see God? No. Can you hear God? You think you can? See a local psychiatrist. Of course you can't. Maybe after a few beers. There you go. You're right. I am the best looking person in the world. Right now. You cannot hear God. You can talk to God. And you can learn Torah. And that's God talking to you. Through God's words, as we said. But you can't actually... So what have we got of God? His name. His reputation. It's a feeling. So when you don't acknowledge God, you're killing him, as it were. Killing his name in this world. That's killing God. How do you kill a person? You hit him on the head and they die. So watch carefully. First commandment is between us and God. Don't kill God. Second commandment is don't kill each other. Same thing. We're putting the connection between us and God and us and each other on the same plane. If you want to get involved spiritually, you've got to treat people well. But you also got to treat God well. You can't just be one of those peeps who's like, yeah, I'm nice to people. When it comes to God, and I'm Jewish, I get rid of him. No. It's got to be connected. Everyone get it? Key word, acknowledgement. Okay, it's been a long time. Let's move a little faster. Commandment number two is... do not recognize the idols of others. Simply put, you can't get involved in idol worship. Here's a little piece of trivia. How many commandments are there in the Ten Commandments? How many commandments are there in the Ten Commandments? A little clue. How many in the Ten Commandments? No, 13. There you go. Because actually, commandment number two is made of four. So you have the nine others, and these four, you get 13 commandments. These four are divided up into four sections. Say you can't worship them the normal way, the non-way, they're various different connections. You can't bow down to them unusually, and the normal way, and the non-normal way, whatever it was. Now, we don't have idol worship today, really. Okay, we have American idol worship, but not more than that. Not more than that. Yeah? It used to be there was this tremendous desire, which we don't really have an idea about because it's pretty much gone. Where we would... Now, having said all this, there are some religions that, according to Judaism, are, according to most opinions, considered to be idol worship. Christianity, for example, according to Judaism, according to most opinions, is a form of idol worship. When you walk into a church, right, he's up on the wall, she's up there, the whole mishpacha. Whole family's there, right? According to Christian theology, right, he is the Son of God. According to Judaism, he was just a Jewish rabbi. But according to Christianity, they say that he was God incarnate. So we consider that to be idol worship. As opposed to Islam. Right, according to Islam, was Muhammad God? No! He was a prophet. And their prophets, and the Jews their prophets. We don't longer have any prophets. We are no longer a prophet organization. Thanks for coming. Tough crowd. Right! No more. However, that's why, by the way, including Judaism, really, according to strict Jewish law, you shouldn't even walk into a church. But you can walk into a mosque. I don't always recommend it. But I've walked into a mosque before to pray. When was that? Anyone know? In Hebron, in Israel, that is the place of our patriarchs and our matriarchs. Most of them, not all of them. Rachel isn't buried there. And that is actually a mosque. And Jewish people to this day, well, a little bit trickier now, politically and probably according to your life as well, but you can walk in there and pray. It's not idol worship. I mean, same God. Maybe on a slightly different route. But there's no idol worship. Walking to a church, though, not so good. Okay, so that's commandment number two. Let's jump to the other side. What's commandment number seven? Do not commit adultery. Oh, damn. Who put that there? Quickly, where's the wine out? Take it out. Cut and paste it somewhere else. Right, do not commit adultery. Here's a question. What's wrong with idol worship? Good thing, bad thing? Somebody? Michael was your name?
Yeah.
Michael, idol worship, good or bad?
It creates a person.
Number two is?
The negation of, the lack of acknowledgement of God.
Or saying, actually, there is more than one God. That's a bad thing, right? You're not so convinced. Let's try the other side. Adultery, good thing or bad thing?
Bad.
Oh, suddenly, the women speak up. The men are like, well, it depends, isn't it? Depends who you ask, Rabbi, and when you're asking. I saw those polygamists. Those guys look happy. Women, a little depressed, but hey, at least the guys are happy. 15 wives. By the way, anyone know what the punishment is for two wives? Two mother-in-laws. Oh, difference between in-laws and outlaws. Outlaws are wanted. Okay, enough of that. Enough of that. By the way, I have wonderful, wonderful in-laws. That's because I'm being videotaped. Okay. Okay. So, what's wrong with adultery? All of them were like, sure. And you were like, adultery? Terrible thing. What's wrong with that? Yeah, we don't start arresting animals who have more than one mate. And many of them do. Actually, most of them do. They don't see monkeys sneaking around. What's your name? It's like, your wife's coming. Oh, nothing. That's why monkeys are always smoking. What did I say? Should have been a lawyer. My mother was right. Yes! So what's up with that? Why is it so bad? Becca. Oh! She has what to say.
Cheating on someone in the same way like the idols, you're cheating on God by...
Oh, whoa, you're jumping ahead now. Cheating on someone. Let's start with the adultery thing. What do you mean you're cheating on someone? Who's he cheating?
Cheating on your partner or your other half is in the Torah. It says that your husband or your wife is your other half.
Like, oh, Becca's quoting Torah. So, Rabbi, I'll give you some of your own medicine. I'm going to teach you Torah. Very good, though. So, we see the relationship between husband and wife to be a union between husband and wife, not 15 girlfriends. Absolutely. That's how we see it. Right? It has to be focused towards that person. Focused towards that person. When you stray from that, we know inherently there's a problem. Now let's go back to the idol worship. What's so bad about idol worship? What's so bad about idol worship? You are committing adultery, as it were. As it were. You're visiting other gods. Something interesting about these commandments, by the way. They have something in common. What do they have in common? They both come from a good desire. If you think about it. I want to connect to another person emotionally, spiritually, and yes, physically. I want to connect to a higher power. I want to connect to something outside of myself. But notice, they both start off with a good desire, but just a little bit off both directions, adultery, idol worship, you mess the whole thing up. If your desires are not channeled in the right way, you end up with catastrophe. So the connection over there is exclusivity. If one and six were acknowledgement, acknowledging each other, acknowledging God, number two is exclusive. You can acknowledge me, but are you exclusively involved with me? Am I exclusively connected to my partner in life? Am I exclusively connected to my one God? Commandment number three. Now this is a strange one. What does it say? Oh, what is that? No, it's so biblical. No vain oaths. Any lawyers here? Any lawyers here? Oh, do me a favor. Are there like 40 Jews here? Not one lawyer? You're a lawyer?
Law school.
Law school. Okay. Okay. So you're not a fully culpable yet. You're not completely guilty. Okay. What's an oath? I want a textbook definition. Your parents forked out all that money to ship to law school, to give them a little bit of nachas. I want to know what an oath is.
An oath is when you swear that you're telling the truth.
I swear when I'm telling the truth. What do I swear on?
In court?
Yeah. A Bible. And I swear to?
God.
I swear to God that?
That you're telling the truth.
The
whole truth.
And nothing but the so help me. I would thought the lawyers, you know what? I know what you people charge. For $400 an hour, I want an answer. It depends. You know, come back in 5 days. Charge you some photocopies, then we'll be okay. I know what you people are up to. I know. I'm Jewish too. Okay. So, you swear on a Bible. Interesting. Even in America, to this day, we swear on a Bible. Okay. What are we doing when we swear on a Bible? What are we actually... I mean, what's the whole point of that whole rigmarole? In other words, every law court in this land and the other great lands of the world, to this very day, they swear to tell the truth. What's actually going on? I mean, all the laws... What's the big thing? What are they actually... What are you doing? When you make an oath in the court of law, what are you doing? Yeah.
Well, you're establishing your credibility because you're tying yourself to...
Oh my goodness. Are you a lawyer?
No.
Please don't become one. You're too nice. Yes. You're establishing your credibility by saying that...
I'm connected to God.
I'm connected to God. As God is my... witness. To this very day, all American law is based upon this idea. When you stand in a court of law, you are saying, as God, me and God, we're like this. We're homies. Me and God, we hung out on Saturday in temple. We're together. We're me and God, he's my God. I'm saying, my home God. It's not my home boy, my home fries, it's my home God, right? We're in this together, that's what you're doing. He's saying, as God's my witness, because you weren't there, but God was. So I'm going to bring God down, and I'm going to swear on his name, and all of America, any piece of law, any form of testimony, in any court of law, that means every day, thousands and thousands and thousands of people are doing this. It's an amazing thing. There may be separation of church and state, but God plays a big part in this whole thing. So you're saying that God is my witness to this event, that it really happened. Let's jump to the other side. What's commandment number 8? Do not steal. I've got a question. The rabbi always does. Becca, what's wrong with stealing?
You're taking somebody else.
Why? Who said it's yours?
It's not yours.
Who said it's not mine?
The person who owns it.
Okay, I've now got it. I own it. And I'm telling you, it's mine. Aren't I annoying? Now you really feel sorry for my wife and kids, right? Don't feel sorry for me. Okay. I mean, you're obviously right. But here's a good question. What an American law says you can't steal? I mean, what is it? What American law says I own something? I have rights. Thank you so much. Is anybody here from America? I know we got. It's like I'm Russian. You have no rights to anything. It all belongs to the freaking government. What do I know? Yes. You have rights. Welcome to American Law 101 with Rabbi Lawrence. You have rights. What do those rights protect? My stuff. Deep. My stuff, Rabbi. My iPod and my car. Right. So they protect not only your stuff, also your freedom of speech, your freedom to carry...
Firearms,
right? Which has been discussed in the Supreme Court recently, yeah? But they protect your rights. Let me just say very, very interesting. In Judaism, according to Jewish law, you have no rights. Ooh. Now, 1 second. Rabbi, are you telling me, says Becca, that I'm going to go to your house, and he's like, grab stuff, and you're like, I got no rights to it. Is that allowed according to Jewish law? Is that allowed? No, it says do not steal. You just read it. It says, do not steal. So one second. If according to American law, I got rights. Therefore, I can't take your stuff because I got rights to my property. I bought it. I own it. It's my possession. It's mine. Cool. According to Jewish law, I got no rights, but then I can't steal. So what's up with that? How do we, like, you know what I'm saying, put those pieces of the puzzle together, my peeps? Crazy idea. Crazy idea. You got to hear this. In Judaism, you don't have any rights. You have obligations. So it's not that Becca owns something and she has rights to it. She owns nothing. Everything belongs to God. Everything belongs to God. It happens to be in her possession. Her possession, she owns it. She has no rights to that thing. I and you and you and you and you and you have an obligation not to take what she has. She has no rights to it, but we have obligations not to take it. Now, it pretty much amounts to the same thing. If I take it, I have to give it back or pay her the penalty or a fine or whatever. But look at the difference. It's such a subtle but important difference. In Judaism, I have no rights. I only have obligations. What do rights do? This is mine. You people stay out. Man is an island, or in this case, woman. In Judaism, no. In Judaism, we are all obligated not to take from Becca. It falls upon us. That means we're all in this whole thing together. I am obligated to take care of you, and you, and you, and you, and you. We're all in it. It's like a proactive, as opposed to an inactive, relationship we have to each other. You hear? In other words, in American society, you could turn around and say, I don't want to give charity. I don't have to. According to American law, does it say, thou shalt give charity? No. It does say, thou shalt want a tax break. Thereby, you will want to give charity. But according to Judaism, it can't say that. Because you don't own your money. You have no rights to it. It's put in your ownership. And you could do what you want with it. But I can tell you at the same time that you have to give 10% away to charity, to tzedakah. Because you have obligations. You have obligations. So the whole premise of Jewish law, as opposed to all other secular laws, is based upon me giving to others, as opposed to every other society, which is me, I have, I own. Me, 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 me. And in Judaism, it's you, 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 you. Okay. Connection, please. Number three, no vain oath. So what's a vain oath? A vain oath is making an oath for no good reason. Just saying it. Lying about it. I go to court of law. I stand there. And I just make an oath for no reason. I just use God's name. Actually, technically speaking, a vain oath means a false one. Made for no reason whatsoever. If I swear I didn't take $1 million from Becca, and I really did, that's a bad thing. What this is saying is, I'm just swearing for no reason whatsoever. For no real ulterior motive. No stealing, no vain oaths. No stealing, no vain oaths, yeah?
It's kind of like stealing, because then you're saying it when you don't really mean it, or like you have an obligation to only say it when there's a reason for it, or there's a meaning behind it.
Very nice. So it's like this. How do you steal God? You can't steal God. Because remember, it's on that side, yeah? No vain oaths. I can't steal God, but I can steal His name. When I stand in the court of law, and I say, me and God were like this, and I lie, or I talk nonsense, that's a bad thing. I'm using God's name for my own ulterior motives. I can't steal God, and I can't steal... Anyone know? What's the biggest thing you can steal from a person? What's the biggest thing you can steal from a person? The what? Themselves. Their dignity, for sure. But you know what? Take my dignity, but keep me free. Kidnapping. This commandment is talking specifically about kidnapping. Now, do not steal in things is mentioned elsewhere in the Torah. But over here we're talking kidnapping. So do not kidnap a person. Give them freedom. By the way, look at societies of this day. How many people are enslaved after being kidnapped from their families? In America, not in America, in the world. Millions. Right? Kidnapping, slave trade, that's kidnapping. The Jews for thousands of years have been saying, no, you've got to let people be free. You cannot steal the most important thing they have. That's themselves. Same thing with God. You can't kidnap God. How do you kidnap God? You're like, quickly, put him in the car. No. There ain't a car big enough. You can't steal God's name for your own purposes. So what's the key word? Respect. I respect my fellow human being, and I respect God as well. That's the idea. Okay, two more to go. Number four, easy peasy. What's number four? Keep Shabbat. Okay, what's all that about? Why do I keep Shabbat? What does Shabbat talk about? Day of rest. Right. Why am I resting? Because I work so hard. Very good. Unless I'm a lazy bum, which I'm not. Which I am sometimes. Why am I resting? What's the idea of resting? Yeah? Because God rested. Okay. When did God rest? Which is creating the world. After creating the world. So God created the world then. Rested. God doesn't rest. Doesn't need a rest. He's like, oh, that was tough. Making those trees, whew, those leaves, every inch. No, God doesn't need physical rest. Right, what does rest mean? God stands back and lets it go. So too on Shabbat, we work, 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 work. Shabbat comes, we say, we're not God. We create the world, God did. That's the reason for Shabbat. Two reasons given the Torah for Shabbat. One is, God took us out of Egypt, so we're not slaves anymore. And we're not slaves to this day. And once a week we testify to that. We say we were slaves, we're not slaves anymore. Because God took us out of Egypt. And number two, God created the world. I'm also not God. I'm not the creator. Two reasons why we keep Shabbat. So Shabbat isn't just like, oh, that was a tough week. Shabbat is a proactive rest. It's a doing. I get involved in spiritual activities I didn't get a chance to get involved in all week. Now, you also rest a little bit. It has to be calm. Because you can't think and talk and get involved in spiritual discussions if you're still running around the office and running around the work and the world. You've got to be in one place, cool, calm, relaxed. At that point, I can stop and think. But it's about thinking. It's about thinking. Jump to the other side. Commandment number nine is to not be a false witness. We're back in law court again. Remember that? We said, don't make false oaths. We're also now saying, and you can't be a false witness. Which means, I can't stand in a court of law as a witness and say, I saw it when I didn't. Every society is held together by the law system. Every lawyer is held together by the fees they charge. But every society is held together by the law system. You need a fair and just law. If there are people lying in court, if you got that, what have you got? You got dictatorship. It's all over. It's all done. That's not good. Can't be a false witness. Actually, according to the Jewish law, even if I don't even say anything, I just stand there and they're like, oh, they got a witness with them. Let's stop the case. No, you can't even turn up and pretend you were there and saw it when you didn't. Connection, please. Keep Shabbat. Don't be a false witness in a law court. Now, I would not have put do not be a false witness in the top 10. If I could pick top 10 Jewish, all right, Dave Letterman, top 10 Jewish laws. False witness? I don't know. 412 maybe. What's up with... What are we saying? What's the idea we're trying to get out of this? When you stand and bear witness in the law court, which again, thousands upon thousands of people do, and that's what keeps the whole legal system going, which keeps society going, what am I doing? I am telling the truth. Whole truth, nothing but the truth. It's all about truth. Emet. When I stand on Friday night, on Shabbat, what do? I stand with a cup of wine in my hand. I make kiddush on that wine. Why do I stand? Because I'm testifying. That's why you stand Friday night, which is the main part of Shabbat. I stand with a couple and I stand and I test. What do I testify to? To the fact that God created the world. That's what the Jewish people are. We are witnesses. The real witnesses. The J witnesses. No. Jewish witnesses. We stand and testify that my father did this, and my mother, and my grandfather, all the way back to Mount Sinai. And we testify that God is the God that spoke to the Jewish people and said, I created the world. So what's the connection? It's truth. Truth. I'm truthful with my fellow man when it comes to law courts, and I tell the truth when it comes to my relationship with God. I keep Shabbat. Because truth is, I didn't create the world. It looked like it, because for 6 days I was doing a lot of work, but I'm not the creator. And I'm free now. Why? Because I got out. Because God took your ancestors out of Egypt. That's why you're free now. It's all about Emmet. So that is the connection. Last two, and then we'll go to questions. This is the best, by the way. I want to really think about this one, because this is... Commandment number 5 is, you shall honor your father and your mother. Honoring your parents. What the heck does that mean? Anybody know? Honoring your mother and your father. According to Jewish law, there are specific things you have to do and specific things you're not allowed to do in order to fulfill this law. Actual things. The oral tradition, the oral Torah tells us exactly, gives us real examples. There's many, 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 many of them. But it gives tangible ones. I'll give you some of them. According to Jewish law, you are not allowed to sit in your father or mother's chair. Let's say your father's got one of those lazy boys. Man, those big, like, fat puppy things. You're going to sit there like that? Got, like, a fridge in there. A remote control center. What an amazing thing, that. I came to America. I'm like, wow, what a big, comfortable chair. That's my lazy boy. I'm like, oh, my God. What a name for a chair. What are you saying? I am lazy, and I'm like a boy. I do nothing in this chair. I don't have to get up. My remote control is right here. Yes, Jeannie.
How about a magnet remote control and then other remote controls?
Hear that? Genius. How about I install a remote control in my head? So I'm like, channel 1, 2, 3, 4. Right? Turn off. I'm sorry. Very good. Fine. So there I am. So my father has a chair. He always sits in. According to Jewish law, a dining room table. It's his chair. According to Jewish law, he can't sit in it. Let's say your father's name is Bob. And your mother's name is Emily. You can't say, hey, Bob. Can't call your parents by the first name, according to Jewish law. Got to say, hey, mom or dad. Right? According to Jewish law, when your father and mother walk in, you've got to stand up for them. By the way, the same applies for a man when his wife walks in. You like that, right? Now, not every time. In and out, like a yo-yo. Up, down, up, down. But the first time, there you are sitting down in the morning, right, having your tea, right? Your husband walks in, your wife walks in. Or your parents walk in, like, yeah, hi, Bob, how you doing? No. You stand up to greet them. That's respect. That's honor. Take care of their physical needs. They have enough to eat. Have to drink. Are they okay? So tough. Because there's a lot of emotional baggage we're all carrying about our parents. Don't stop me. It's a tough one. One second, quick question. Remember what you said before? We said that parents are on that tablet between us and God. What was all that about? What's up with that God-parent thing? Yeah. You treat your parents the way you treat God. Good. So according to Judaism, there are three partners in creation. Mother, father, and God. There are three partners. There are meant to be three partners in creation. Parents create the physical body. God brings the soul in. They're all knit together. Let me add another little deep thing over here, and I want you to hear this. People, now this is a side point. people who have a relationship with a problem in their relationship with their parents, I have found, also have a problem with God as well. They're angry with God. People who are angry with their parents, there's something there. Now listen, all parents aren't perfect. I'm a parent, I'm not perfect. I hear that. But people who are angry with their parents, right, later in life, and they're still fuming, not like, yeah, my parents, jerks, I'm over it. No, that's understandable. But people are still angry with their parents, and didn't work it through, usually have a problem with God as well. It's like, your parents are a microcosm of God. If you understand the idea of God, you can look at your parents. They created you. They sustain you for many, many years. They're like, God said, I'm going to give you an example of me in the world. Tough, isn't it? Hard to work through that relationship. Says, God, I'm the same kind of thing. You're going to have to work through that relationship. It's really not easy. Okay? So that is honoring your parents. And God is kind of thrown in the picture as well. Like, I'm part of that relationship. Somehow, you're going to have to work it out with your parents before you work it out with me. It's like all those Jews in therapy, right? They're all in therapy. They're all angry, angry. Why are you angry? My mother wasn't good to me. My father never told me he loved me. Right? You're like, okay, fine. You're 45. Get over it. Like, no. I can't get over it. I need to get it out of my system. It's like, what's up? No. You hear it. Because your parents, they get into you. You couldn't have seen it for 20, 30 years and they're still part of who we are. It's something you can't take out of the person. You really can't take it out of a Jew, right? But it's part of who we are in our essence. So to God. God is also part and parcel of part of that package. Let's jump to the other side for a moment. The other side says, do not be jealous. Isn't that a strange law? Have you ever seen an American law that says, do not be jealous? Of course not. Why not? How can you command an emotion? You can't command an emotion. That's ridiculous. The answer is, you're right. American law, British law, Russian law, maybe they can actually. But most laws cannot command. They may try. Oh, they try. But really you can't. Your mind is always free. But God can tell you to control your emotions because God sees them. God's involved at that level. So emotions you can mandate in Judaism because it's God's law. God can say, do not be jealous. Is jealousy a good thing or a bad thing? Why? You're like, oh, I love those shoes. I want those shoes. I want them. You're like, oh, top 10, you're out. Yeah, I think an amazing thing, by the way. One of the commentators says the Ten Commandments actually are this order that was given was for a reason. And number 10 is at the bottom because it's the base of all the others. In other words, first of all is jealousy. That's the base. If you mess that up, all the rest fall. That's the roots. Right? That's the foundation. If that falls down, the rest fall down. If you're jealous, it leads to wanting other people's things, stealing people, adultery, right? Stealing them, killing them, kidnapping, and eventually ends up with you denying God. Denying God. It all starts with jealousy. That's what the commentators say. That's a big one. It's also bad about it. So you've got to look at it from God's eyes. What you have is what you need. And what I have is what I need. And if I got 5 million in the bank, which I don't, that's what God wants me to have. You can't come along and say, that's for me. I'm jealous of it. No! And by the way, we live in a society that prides itself upon this problem. We live in a world where every billboard is of, not a woman, right? A pencil, right? With airbrushed to remove every blemish. So we have all these wonderful kids going, wow. If I had those eyes, if I had that nose, if I had that chin, if I had the rest of the package, then I could be me. You hear the problem? I was like, whoa, no, no, no. That's not the Jewish way. Exactly what you have is what you need. Hear that? If I had that, I could be me. Judah says, no, no. You are made exactly as you need to be. With the amount of money you have, the knowledge, okay, you can grow in it. But at some point, it's just who you are. I mean, I could play violin all day, every day. I ain't going to be no Yudim anyway. I could dance. I ain't going to be no Jackson. Ow! What? Am I embarrassing you? Imagine my kids. My poor kids. It's painful. I'm like, let's dance, kids. They're like, please stop. Like, you know what? We're leaving home. I'm like, you're seven. Like, we don't care. We'd rather live by ourselves than have you as a father right now. Come on, calm down with that. All right, let's sing. I can show. They're like, uh-oh. So jealousy is what you have should be mine. And Judaism says, what is mine is mine. Okay, let's tie them together. What has jealousy got to do with honoring your mother and father? And now you should get it. Yeah.
If you have jealousy, you cannot honor what you have. And your parents what you have, so if you're not honoring them, you're...
Beautiful. Two possible answers. One answer is, what gave you the nose you have? Your parents. What gave you the eyes? The education? Everything about you came from your parents. Now, you can correct things, right? No doubt about it. But ultimately, you've got to be happy with who you are, in essence. Nothing's going to be perfect because it all comes to your parents. Your DNA, right? Your foibles. It's like, you know, your parents did the stuff to you as a kid. You're like, I'm never going to do that to my kids. Until you become a parent. And then you do that to your kids. Right? I'm never going to take my kids to school wearing pajamas. Right? I'll get kids in the car. Right? You're wearing pajamas. Like, yeah, whatever. Get in. Right? But like, please, mom, stay in the car. You're like, no. I want to walk in and say hello to all your friends. Give them all a big hug and kiss. Tell them I'm your mommy and daddy. Like, right? Okay. So it's like this. Listen to the beauty of Torah. The idea is honor your mother, honor what they give you. Everything you are has come from them. Don't be jealous of other people and what they are. Because you are who you are for a person, and the parents you have were given to you for a reason. You're like, wow, if my parents were better and they were nice to me, then I'd be okay. Possibly. But in the end, they're your parents. Get over it. And God runs the world, they were given to you for a purpose and a reason. You may not see the reason, but there is a reason. Commandment number two, reason number two is, how about this? What makes you Jewish?
Parents.
Your parents, right? What makes your parents Jewish?
Yeah.
Their parents. What makes them Jewish? Their parents. You get it? You have somebody walking, like some religions are walking like, okay, I'm a Muslim. Where do I sign? No. You don't walk in like, I'm a Christian. There's my cross. No. Judaism, it's your parents. Now, if you want to do it, you're going to have to get into it. But in the end, it's your parents. And your parents' parents. And parents' 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 parents. Parents' parents' parents. All the way back to Mount Sinai. We started, right? We started on Mount Sinai. We finish at Mount Sinai. So what has that got to do with do not be jealous? So one of my rabbis told me a beautiful idea. Don't be jealous of other people's religions. All these Jews, they want to be Buddhists, they go to the ashram, they want to be Jew-boos, Jewish Buddhists. Right? There's a real thing. They want to be Christians, they want to be Muslims, they want to be communists, they'll find some other religion. But forget about it. No, 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 no. Don't be jealous. Honor your mother and father. I honor the Jewish person that you are. Do not be jealous of them. Stick with what you have. What's the key word? Appreciation. I appreciate my parents and where I come from. So we have commandment number one. I'm the Lord your God. Commandment number six. Do not kill. Acknowledgement. Acknowledge each other. Acknowledge God. Number two, no other idols. Number seven, no adultery. Exclusivity. I'm a one with my partner. I'm a one with God. Number three, no vain oaths. Number eight, do not steal. Respect. That's what I'm going for. Number four, keep Shabbat. Number nine, no false witness. Truth. Truth to my friends. Truth to God. And number five, honor your mother and father. Number ten, do not be jealous. What's my key word? Appreciate. I appreciate where I come from and what I have. My Judaism and the things that I own. And I'm not jealous of other people and what they have. Ten Commandments, five key statements that make the world what it is today. Thank you very, very much. We will... I thank you. Any questions on anything we discussed tonight? seats? Wow, I must be a really, really good teacher. Or you didn't understand a word I said this evening. Yes, Tiff.
I have a question.
Yes, darling.
How do you reconcile the idea of social justice with people saying, well, I'm rich and I have all this because God wants it?
Okay. In Judaism, the question was, how do you rectify social justice, right? When people say, I'm rich and I have what I want. Fine. So there's a very interesting answer to this question. And the answer is, why did God create poor people? Hear the question? God could have said, you know what? Everyone's rich. Everyone gets $1 million. Everyone gets a Ferrari. It's God, right? So the Talmud says, God created poor people so that rich people could give charity and do mitzvah. In other words, social justice is like, oh, we've got to care for each other. We have to love each other. Give me a hug. No. There are obligations we have. If there are poor people, then the rich people can't give. Everyone has their role. Everyone has what to do. We have to get involved. Now, where does social justice come from? From the Torah. Freeing of slaves. Everyone's obsessed. Freeing of slaves. Where does it come from? Judaism speaks about it. It's a Jewish concept. Before anybody else. No one is walking around pre-Har Sinai saying, oh, let people go. No. Jews had it first from God. That's why Jews are obsessed with social justice. Obsessed with it. Look at any charity involved with social justice. Save the whale. Save the penguin. Save Darfur. Same thing. Always a Jew. Got to get his nose in there. That's a big nose. Yes.
What about jealousy of the parents?
Jealousy of?
You were talking about anger and anger with parents.
Yeah.
You're jealous of your parents, the don't be jealous part.
Yeah.
Because you cannot achieve as much. So you cannot honor your parents. So how does that come?
So you're saying a person may be jealous of their parents, or their parents. Oh, yeah. So you know what? Parents like anybody else, I guess. A person could be, and that'll stunt their growth. And if you're jealous of another person, same thing. It's a big mistake. It's a big mistake. In other words, we're saying it's all people, including parents, family.
So it applies person to person as well as child.
Yes. Okay. We're going to stop over there. There'll be another class in about a month's time on health, healing, and exercise according to Judaism, which will be taking place in about a month's time. Have a great night. By the way, this Wednesday night, we have an event called J-Care. There's a billboard over there. You want to see something about it. Basically, we're going to buy some food for people who need food. We're going to pack it here. There's a big event to raise money for it. If you want to get involved, you can see Kate over there. Happy to take your name and number. Bye.